Welcome to the Dietitians Unplugged podcast with Aaron Flores and Glenys Oyston. Join us as we explore the idea of health and wellness from a new perspective. Each episode, we will discuss topics that will help you improve your health, body image, and fitness without obsessing on the scale or counting calories. We believe in health at every size, intuitive eating, and body positivity, and we want to help you build the confidence to ditch the scale, embrace your health, and unplug from the world of diets and body shame.
We're back. It's Aaron and Glenys back for another podcast episode of Dietitians Unplugged. Thanks for joining us. Today we're going to talk about a topic that you're probably hearing a lot about. We were really inspired by an article that Aaron found a little while back about, basically it's about clean eating.
Yep.
And it's really, this article I feel like takes clean eating to a whole new level. This is about parents who have their kids on sort of a, what they call a clean eating diet.
Right. So it's not just about doing it for yourself. It's about actually, oh, I'm going to do this to my kids now.
Right. Exactly. So, and I think the extremeness of this really struck us because
yes,
being, of course, not what we would consider clean eaters. I mean, I feel like I'm, I don't even want to say what kind of an eater I am, but I would like to say
I wash my food, so I consider it
right.
Clean.
I try not to have bacteria-laden food or like, you know, E. coli appetizers or
right,
anything like that. But this is, I think what really kind of got us going about this is about parents who have their kids on these really restrictive diets. So just to give an example, the article sort of starts out talking about this boy and he cleanses his system with chia seeds for breakfast and eats spinach cooked in coconut oil for lunch. Quinoa stir fry is a favorite for dinner, and the nearest he gets to fast food is homemade chicken nuggets coated in spelt batter. Now, I'm not going to criticize that as a diet, because if that's somebody's diet at home, and that's what the kids eat, and that's what the family eats, that's fine. That's your diet. But it kind of goes a little bit further.
Right. And so, you know, we found this article out of the Daily UK, right? So these are all British families raising their kids. First of all, it was nice to see that clean eating is not just a exclusively US problem. We're exporting this lifestyle now.
Maybe we can blame Britain for this.
Maybe.
Could
yeah,
we? Yeah.
Let's not start an international crisis.
Sorry,
right?
To our British listeners. We're not going to blame you for clean eating.
But no, I think, you know, the fact that they are doing this to their kids is what really resonated, right? So all of a sudden, the article goes into all these examples of how really it's the mothers. The fathers are sort of either going along with it or not a part of it. How the mothers are really so concerned with anything that they considered toxic food, something that might harm their son or their daughter.
Right. And not actual toxic foods, like, again, you know, contaminated foods that have sat too long in your fridge.
Right.
It's sugar, wheat, gluten.
Dairy,
eggs.
Processed foods, something from
and
a box.
Processed foods too, but that, yeah. I'm also thinking like, you know, gluten, which is kind of a natural, it
yeah,
exists naturally in wheat. You know, that's not an additive. It's not something we create. They're terrified of gluten.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. And so they're going to all these really intense behaviors to manage the minutia of their child's diet. So, and what we're looking at in this article is kids anywhere from, you know, 6 to 18 to 24 months. And, you know, as a father, when I read this, you know, I sort of have to look at it with two lenses, right? So I'm going to look at it with as a dietitian and then as a father. As the father in me was appalled also for the simple reason. Being a dad for me is like letting go of control. I mean, that was the lesson I've learned, is that, you know what? I can plan for everything in the world, but as soon as those kids come, right, all hell flies loose, right? And you just better like hold on and ride the wave. And part of being a parent to me and being a good parent is rolling with the punches, right? And taking everything in stride. So as a father, I heard this and I'm like, they are not taking anything in stride. They are like, I'm going to control everything about my child's food. Everything.
Yeah, it's sort of putting their kids in a metaphorical, like, bubble, you know.
It's a total bubble.
The bubble boy.
They're nutritional, you know, bubbles.
This is, yeah, this is like, they're sealed off. And I think this is going to work for them for a while, because if you've got an 18-month-year-old, a 2-year-old, they're not getting exposed to a lot of people in the world. You know, you can really control that. They're not in school yet. Maybe they're going to go to preschool. Maybe you could even control that environment to some degree, bringing your own food, that kind of thing. But they're pretty much under your control at that point. And so they don't know what they're missing. And I think that's fine. You know, you don't have to. Nobody's obligated to introduce their child to sweets or any kind of food. But the reality is we live in a world where that kind of food is abundant.
Yeah.
And kind of celebrated to some degree. I mean, as much as it's reviled, it's also celebrated. You know, we have cakes at birthdays. So imagine, you know, this child a few years down the road, he's 6, 8, he's at a birthday party and the cake comes out and he says, I can't eat this cake. And it's not because he has an allergy. And I've known kids that have had food allergies, and it's actually really traumatic for them to have to sort of be isolated from the other food that's being served at birthdays. And I know the mother of those children went to great lengths to keep her child safe from those food allergies, which were potentially dangerous. But it was really sad for the kids, and it was a little bit hard on her too. So if you don't have to do that, why do that? If you don't have to have that kid have that experience of like, I don't get to eat the cake. It's going to kill me. Or that's my mom told me.
Right.
So that's the first experience that child's going to have. Or the child is going to go to school and there's going to be like the cookie black market. Yeah. And he's going to be trading, you know, his quinoa spelt crackers for some Oreos.
Some Chips Ahoy.
Yeah, for some Chips Ahoy. And you've lost control at that point, and you've got a kid who's like, this is like the best food ever, and I want to eat this all the time because I've never had it, and I know I'm not supposed to have it. You know, it's that sort of setting up of the restriction. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's just a lot that's going to go wrong down the line, and especially if they're giving these kids the idea that the food is toxic. It's not just we don't eat these foods as a family. It's that the food is toxic or it will do bad things to you.
Right.
There's a lot of morality attached to that food. That's going to mess. That's what I think is going to be the problem.
Yeah.
It's not now. I mean, maybe if these parents are denying their kids some essential foods, kids need a lot of fat to grow, but they also need carbohydrates, protein. And a lot, they need a variety. So I'm just wondering how much is also being denied from their diet right now. But let's say none of that is, and they're doing well with that. I think it's just it's the down the road situation.
Absolutely. And you know, that's sort of like the dietitian lens, right, of looking at it and saying, you know, this is the complete opposite of Ellen Satter, right?
Yes, it is.
There is no division of responsibility. I have the responsibility. The parent has the responsibility. Child has no responsibility, no control. Does not develop any autonomous choice with food, and does not then, you know, for Ellen Satter, enthusiasts become this competent eater.
Right.
Because everything is controlled for them. And the other thing that struck me as I read this article is the lengths at which these parents are going in the future that they want to control their kids' food. Like, hey, I decided to be a stay-at-home mom just for the sole purpose of being able to control their food. I'm thinking of finding a school that will let me pack all their food for them instead of them having to eat lunch at school. I'm worried about the day when they are away from me and I can't control their food in preschool and what will happen. That level of control, right, exerted on their kid, it's not giving the child the experience to be competent, be not just a competent eater, but just try anything on their own.
Right, exactly. There's not going to be any exploration with food. I think eventually there's going to be a lot of fear and anxiety around food for these kids,
yep.
Especially as they start to become more social, and you know, the parent takes the child to other places and the child can see, even if you never say to the child, this food is bad, the child's going to see, like, oh, we don't try those foods. It's not a safe environment for him to explore. And then I think the other thing about being restrictive in childhood, struck me. They came out with some recent studies that said that peanut exposure earlier in life actually reduced the risk of peanut allergies.
Yeah.
And they used to think the opposite, hold off on peanuts because they might develop. But what they're finding now is kids exposed earlier to peanuts generally seems to reduce the risk of peanut allergy. And I'm thinking that maybe there's something to kids being exposed to a wider variety of foods earlier on,
mm-hmm.
you know. And yeah, that might include sugar, because that child is going to experience sugar at some point. I guarantee you. Going to experience sugar.
Yep.
At some point in his or her life, and probably just go bonkers because sugar tastes really good.
Right. I mean, isn't that the whole sort of scenario of why some kids get like this quote unquote sugar high? Is because maybe it's been denied so much that they finally eat it and they're so excited to have the food that they're not getting actually triggered by the sugar. They're actually just excited to eat something that they don't get.
And who knows, maybe being denied sugar on a regular basis is causing them to eat way more sugar.
Exactly.
So there was all that. And it made me think, like, this is more example of clean eating. So what is clean eating? I was really curious because I've been hearing this term for a few years now. And the first time I saw it was maybe five or six years ago. There was a magazine called Clean Eating. Okay, what's that? It looks like it has recipes. That's kind of cool. So I bought it, and I never really fully got the gist of what clean eating was. It seemed to be a lot of fruits and vegetables. It seemed to have an emphasis on organic. And then I tried some of the recipes, and they were really bland, and I wasn't into them at all.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if they were bland because so much of what goes into them has to be limited, or what could go into them has to be limited because it's not clean food.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe they were just not really good chefs coming up with good recipes, but I kind of put that away and I said, okay, clean eating, whatever. I'm not into it, obviously. And then it's just, I've really started to hear it more again in the last couple years. And so what's the definition of clean eating? I mean, there isn't really one.
I bet you if we had 100 people come in this office and ask them what clean eating meant, we'd probably get 100 different answers.
Absolutely, because I think it does mean different things to different people. If you ask a paleo person what clean eating is, it's going to be anything that doesn't contain a carbohydrate or a starch or whatever it is that they're not eating, or processed foods. If you talk to somebody in another country, their clean eating is going to be anything that doesn't make them violently ill with food poisoning.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, in countries where getting, you know, proper sanitation and for food is a challenge, you know, or, you know, even clean water, that's a whole big thing. So I think that, so what I tried to do was I looked online and I found a little definition. And it was as vague as it could get. It was like, eat 5 to 6 times a day, which completely goes against my intuitive eating sensibilities. What if you only feel like eating 3 times that day?
Yeah.
Choose organic, clean foods whenever possible. So this is good. I think it presupposes that you are a middle to upper middle class person who can afford organic foods. Drink at least 2 liters of water a day. I mean, that's fine, but some people don't feel like that much, and some people like to drink a lot more. Get label savvy. Clean foods contain just 1 or 2 ingredients. So that's Aaron just,
my eyes popped out.
Eyes
sorry.
Popped out yeah. of his head. So you really are going to be spending a lot of time at home cooking every single item of food. and you better, you know, be a good cook and like to do that.
Yeah.
So, and then avoid processed and refined foods. We've heard that a million times. Oh, anything, steer clear of anything high in trans fats. Okay, that's good advice.
Right.
Finally, yeah. And then anything fried or anything high in sugar. So, you know, no fun foods at all.
Right.
It's just, it goes on and on. It's like, I mean, it's kind of vague. Learn about portion sizes. Reduce your carbon footprint. Shop with a conscience. It's just really vague, in my opinion. It's now, all the advice we've been getting over the years. But,
you know, and there are some other things in there that I would probably like. I mean, I want to eat with less carbon footprint.
Sure.
Right? I want to eat, you know, with a social conscience as well as a physical one,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So there, you know, when I hear clean eating, the the thing that really stands out to people who really, you know, are say, oh, I'm got to eat clean, or, you know, this is something I'm really trying to do, I'm just trying to eat clean, is almost a religious fervor to it. Is that it's not something that is gray, right? It's very black or white. I, you know, I have to eat this way. And if I don't, everything seems to fall apart. And to me, that's where the problem lies, because we've adopted this sort of zealotry, right? This almost belief that, you know, I have to be this militant with my food, this strict with my food, with no wiggle room, or I'm going to fall apart.
Yeah, my life is going to be a disaster.
And yours will too.
And I'm going to die.
Right. And unless you come along with me, yours is going to fall apart too.
Right. And we can't be friends if you're not eating like me.
Okay. So, but you know what?
Yeah.
That's exactly what happens in the article, right? Is that these families are isolated. They're isolated from people because of their clean eating. They're not going out to social events. They're turning down birthday parties. Their friends are not coming over to, or they're not going over their friends to eat because of their strict adherence to this way of eating. And now, let me give you the other side of it, right? So, because I want people to be, have, if there's rules, like you said earlier, if there are rules that apply to you for your eating, that's great. So we have a lot of friends who keep kosher. And they keep kosher in their home. So they, you know, live by these they're strict rules.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like they never come over to our house. We don't keep kosher in our house, but they come over. They figure out ways to make it work. They don't let it deny their friendships, right? Who, for people who don't keep kosher. So there is ways to do it where it becomes flexible. But this is just an example of it being taken to the nth level.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, you bring up a really good point, actually. So kosher is being sort of restrictive for religious purposes with your diet.
Yeah.
Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Okay. So is there a difference between that and this for you?
Yes. Totally. Okay.
What is the difference?
So the difference is for people who keep kosher, they are getting a closer connection to their religion, or and whether it's halal or whether it's whatever religious practices.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that practice is bringing them closer to observance of their religion and bringing them some religious meaning with food.
Okay. And so that's interesting. That's an interesting point. The restriction seems like that's not about the food itself.
No.
It's sort of about the rules that have sort of been set up around
food.
Around food, but that are really have a different purpose, which is to connect you to your religion.
Yes.
Your God. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And this is about the food itself being, you know, being perceived as toxic.
The food is the religion.
Yes. This is what the clean eating.
Yeah.
The food is
right.
The
food is the religion.
And being... Okay, so I'm wondering, I mean, it's interesting to think about it that way, because I'm wondering if enough people sort of spring up around this. I mean, I think actually food is turning into a religion.
Yes.
At this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe down the road we sort of say, okay, but I guess I've never met anybody who's kosher who said, if I eat this food, I'm going to die, or this other food will kill me. And that didn't seem to be what it was about. And this is talking about people saying, these foods are going to kill me. Which is simply probably not true.
Right.
You know.
Well, I think...
I mean, there's just not... We should talk about that. There's no evidence.
Right.
To show that consumption of these foods actually is killing anybody a lot earlier.
Right. Well, I think their argument, mm-hmm. right, if they were here with us, they're not. They're in England, and we're not flying them over. We don't have that kind of budget yet.
No.
Soon. But not now. Is... The last two sentences of this article really highlight the reason. They're concerned about being fat, and they say it.
Yes.
The quote is, to have anyone say my little girl is fat would break my heart.
And
that is, I mean, that's the mic drop moment.
Yes.
I mean, seriously, the worst thing that anyone could say about my daughter is that she's fat.
Right. Not that she's a bad person, that she's fat.
That she's fat.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, it breaks my heart, right? To hear that, it breaks my heart, mm-hmm. as a parent and as a dietitian, because that little girl is going to be in a dietitian's office one day.
Right. Wondering why she keeps gaining weight as she keeps restricting right. her food, or wondering why she feels crazy around food.
Right.
Or, you know, any number of problems that she could probably end up developing, which they have shown happens with restrictive eating for yeah. children. And they do mention it several times. The parents, it seems like the parents started this kind of eating, this quote unquote clean eating, to lose weight themselves. It usually starts at the mother said, oh, I lost a bunch of weight and I went from a size 18 to a size 12 or something yeah. like that. And so to me, that's what it gets down to. This is really what we're probably thinking about, is that people are terrified to get fat
mm-hmm.
because of the rampant fat phobia that is our society now.
Yeah.
And so they are just finding new ways, because everybody knows that diets don't work. So now they're finding new ways to really diet.
Yeah.
That's what this is. That's what I think clean eating is. It's another diet.
Yeah.
And God forbid anybody get or remain fat. And I think, again, I have nothing against somebody really trying to improve their diet, if that's what they want to do.
Yes.
And, you know, eat a lot more vegetables. And I have no problem if people want to eliminate things because it makes them feel good, you know?
Yeah.
I think the litmus test for me is this difficult for you? Is this, are you kind of going around having to tell yourself and your child and your entire family and everybody else that this food is poison and that's the new motivation for you not eating? Instead of, oh, this might make me fat, you turn it into, this food is poison and yeah. that's why I can't eat it.
So let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Because this is a, you know, I like the litmus test question. I think that's interesting, right? Is this hard for you?
Mm-hmm.
And just from my experience, I have people coming in who have come into my office who have express that same sort of comment with intuitive eating, right? I can't do this. It's too hard.
Interesting.
Right? So I would add to your litmus test, like the one comma, right? Is it hard? And is it controlling your life? Right? Is it hard? And is it affecting other parts of your life, your social life, right? Your friends, your family. I mean, is your family always saying, Aaron, come on, buddy, you are like obsessing about gluten and you're okay with, it's okay, you yeah. know? And so sometimes we need to look at how it's the larger effect on not just us, but to everyone around us.
Right. And is this, I guess, is it hard? You're right. Because going to an intuitive eating model can be hard initially.
Yeah.
I guess,
right.
Is it hard forever for you?
Excellent.
Because
perfect.
If you've talked to people who have transitioned over to intuitive yeah. eating, what they say is at first it's really hard, but then it's not hard, and then yeah. it's just eating.
No, that's perfect.
Is this hard forever for you? And I would say, is it enjoyable for you, or is this now your 100% full-time job managing your diet?
Right.
And you know, maybe it is, maybe you enjoy that. Okay, good for you. I did that. I lived that life. That was 100% my full-time job management.
Yeah.
And it became unbearable and unenjoyable.
Yeah.
So I think those are the questions you want to ask yourself.
Yeah.
Is how much enjoyment do you get out of it? But are you just driving everybody else nuts around you?
Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
No, you're absolutely yeah. right. Is that
Not that you have an obligation to keep people sane.
Yeah.
You don't. But, you know, we want to still have friends that aren't rolling their eyes at us because,
right.
you know, hey, this is the problem now.
Listen, I'm sure I have, you know, friends who are in their own mind, rolling their eyes at me, right? Oh, there he is again with the intuitive eating, right?
Talk about it all the time? I never talk about it.
I mean, it put it this way. I don't bring it up unless someone asks me about it.
Right.
Right. But the biggest thing I get is someone will, you know, come up to me and say, hey, Aaron, look, I'm eating intuitively, and they have a cookie.
Right.
Right. And they're like, I'm like, well, that's not really what it is, but yeah. okay, you're doing yeah. a great job.
Good on
with
you.
That.
Enjoy that cookie.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I get sort of comments like that, but listen, this, just in this clean eating topic comes up more and more I just overhear it around this city. More and more. I mean, I think it's a very pretty sounding word,
mm-hmm.
right? It makes us say, oh, I'm eating clean.
Yeah, because who wants to eat dirty food?
Who wants to eat dirty?
Not me.
Right.
Although beets do taste like dirt, and I actually like them.
Right.
Well, so
maybe you're roasting them wrong, because mine are like candy.
Beets taste like dirt. Anyway.
Maybe you have a genetic thing.
We digress. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, so it sounds really cool, right? It sounds like you're doing something really good for yourself. But again, I just, I want to sigh a sigh every time I hear it. And like we were sort of talking about before we started, I feel like one day I'm just going to explode and be like, will you stop with the fucking clean eating, please? And I will probably not say it in that tone.
I would just beg people to stop talking about their diets, you know, and I think that's, I live with the ultimate intuitive eater.
Yeah.
And he just eats what he wants and he's preternaturally healthy.
Yeah.
And he gets crazy when people talk about their diet. And he said, this is the point, is that if that's your diet, go ahead and keep it to yourself. And he says, this is maybe his New England stoic kind of keep your business to yourself kind of style. But he feels that if this is your diet, just go ahead and eat it. But his point is that everybody is coming at him constantly with what they're eating and why they're eating it and how they shouldn't eat something and why they shouldn't eat it and how they have to be good or be bad with food or work it. You know, it drives him crazy because I don't want to hear about your diet ever. You know, he's not interested. He's like, let's talk about movies. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about something interesting.
Yeah.
But the diet. And so I think that again, another litmus test, you know, are you talking about this all the time to people who are not interested in your diet at all?
Right.
You know? Because it's not, listen, we're dietitians. We find food interesting, but I do not talk about this all the time.
Yeah. No, right.
I've got movies to watch. I've got an election to discuss. You know, there's a life to be lived beyond food.
Yeah. Well, we'll save the election stuff for, we would probably lose 37% of our
never
listeners.
Never going to talk about
right.
that.
No, you're right. And so, and I, you know, the word that comes to mind all of a sudden is dogma. You know, it's just like, it's. Like, this is my way, and this is what I'm doing, and yeah, this is what I did for lunch, this is what I did for this, this is what I, you know, I succeeded here, I didn't succeed here, and in the end, no one really cares that much.
Right. And now, can we talk about how this is also the diet of a very rarefied sect of people?
Yes.
This is like, people who can afford to eat like this, you know, I mean, nothing says a country of excess like clean eating.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people say it's the opposite, but to me, this is, you know, you have to really be able to afford organic groceries for everything. And I'm sorry, but I mean, I make a decent living, but I can't afford the price of everything organic. It's really pricey.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's people who have plenty to eat so they can deny themselves food. This is not the diet of people who are struggling. You know, there are people out there who do still struggle to get enough food.
Yeah.
Imagine if they were also trying to live by this sort of clean eating dogma. And I also think, how does this make people feel out in the world that, you know, oh, there's people who eat clean and then the rest of us just eat like shit all the time.
Right.
You know, dirty crap.
Or I'm so food insecure in my house. I don't know where the next meal is coming from. But them over there, they're like, you know, living in spelt land and, you know, in quinoa and, you know, organic kale.
And they will throw out the bread.
Right.
You know.
Right. It's a really great point that you bring up because, again, this is, you're right. It's a tale of excess, right? I have so much free time, so much disposable income on some level that this is what I can worry about.
Yeah, and so much fear. So much fear of nothing real. So of being fat someday. I mean, I don't want to say being afraid of fat is not unfounded because the way fat people are treated in our society is awful.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a valid fear. But Reagan Chastain of the blog Dances with Fat always says the solution to removing stigma is not to, you know, fix the person who's receiving the stigma. It's to fix the stigma.
Yes.
And that's, you know, we've shown that really being fat isn't the be all end all. You know, you're not going to die immediately from that. You might even live longer based on a lot of the studies that show that overweight and, you know, some obese people live longer than normal weight people. So this is unfounded, this fear of fat. We need to say that.
Yeah.
you can eat healthy and you can exercise and you can still be fat and you can still be healthy. So there's no reason to be terrified of it in my mind.
Yeah.
The way these people are terrified.
No, and you know, I think you're absolutely right because it, a lot of this looks at, you know, again, I don't want my kid to be treated, maybe I was fat, right? Maybe some of these parents, right? Mm-hmm. Like some of them have been on diets, right? And they talk about how they struggle. And they're basically saying, I don't want to go through, I don't want them to be treated how I was or to hate my body like I did. When in reality, they probably still hate their body just as much, right?
Yeah, and probably going to live in fear forever.
Right. They didn't solve their body issues by doing all this.
Right.
You know? No, I think it's there was a jaw-dropping part when I read this article and then it was sort of overcome really by sadness and sadness for these kids. Like I was like, oh my goodness.
And I hope that it's just a small number of people who are really into this. Right? Yeah. And we talked a little bit earlier about Ellen Satter.
Yeah.
And if you haven't heard of her, she's the pediatric dietitian guru. She was super influential for me when I started getting into health at every size. I read her. She's sort of an eating model, just like intuitive eating. It's not the same. Yep. It's a different eating model, but it's similar in that it's not restrictive. It really helps parents with kids. We talked about the division of responsibility, which is parents choose when and what to eat, and the child chooses if mm-hmm. she is going to eat
right.
and how much.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it emphasizes available foods and variety of foods and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's definitely anti-restrictive with kids.
And I think the interesting thing for me, and because I use a lot of Ellen Satter both at home and in my practice, is, you know, as a parent, we're talking about control, right? It really it was scary because I had to give up sort of this control that I'm going to make a conscious effort that when I put food in front of my kids, that I'm just going to let them eat whatever they eat. And I'm not going to bribe them. I'm not going to coach them. But I'm just going to let them eat. And it was really hard to do that. I understand the difficulties with it, but the freedom it gave me down the road as a parent has been to this day a blessing, because my kids trust themselves and me with food. And the interesting thing is they completely understand the word trust now and responsibility. So for example, what I understood from Ellen Satter reading it is that, you know, if a child can't handle the division of responsibility, you know, or if they abuse it, things can, it can fluctuate, right? It can move. So, you know, my kids were sort of going a little overboard and mistreating food a little bit and how they ate it. I was like, if I can't trust you with the food I give you, I'll have to take more control. But I don't want to do that because I think you have the skills to do it. And they understood that. And they're like, oh, okay, I get that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ellen Satter is, you know, one of those resources that whether you're a parent or you're a dietitian listening or you're just, you know, you want to learn about it for yourself, is worth every second of your time of reading it.
Absolutely. And it's important to say that this is a really well-validated
yes.
model. You know, it's been studied. And it really works to develop kids that are, they call them competent eaters. But basically, they're not messed up about food. And, you know, and they become adults who are competent eaters. And I think they find they have a lot less problems with food, with eating, even with weight
yeah.
as they go down the road. And it was, even as an adult, I don't have children,
yeah.
But I found her model so instructive for me. And I actually think I kind of went for that model a little bit over intuitive eating for myself, because I love structure and I love providing myself the idea of providing structured meals for myself and snacks if I want them. And so that was really helpful in, you know, me normalizing my eating
yeah.
and giving myself the structure that I always wanted because I didn't get it as a kid. I had a pretty lax diet as a yeah. kid, actually. So I crave structure with eating, but not, I don't crave structure in terms of I'm not allowed to eat a certain amount. I want that freedom. And that's what Ellen Satter is about, is giving a child and parents too freedom within a safe structure.
Right.
A structure that, gives you sort of confidence.
Yeah.
I think.
Absolutely.
And a reassurance that there's going to be food.
Right.
You know, and that you're allowed to eat it.
Right.
So I recommend her for any parents that are struggling with kids eating. I did have a dietitian friend who said when they were raising their daughter, they just said, yep, we took it right to the max. They put out the cake or the ice cream, the dessert, along with the meal.
We've done that. Yep.
Yeah, you've done that. And what happens? At first, they're pretty excited about it. And then they kind of lose interest over yeah. time. Like, okay, this is just another food. Like,
yeah. Right.
Yeah, I think kids are naturally curious. So that's getting back to this article. I think that this is going to thwart the natural curiosity of kids. Like I said,
totally.
Initially, this diet, if it's just the diet that your family eats, that's not a problem. It's about, again, it's the morality that you're delivering with the food.
Right.
So, and that is going to, you know, eventually kick in years later.
Right. And you know, listen, I think the key word you use there is curiosity, right? Kids are curious about everything, including food. And that curiosity, you're right, is thwarted and it needs to be nurtured because they need to learn what it's like to even overeat at times and what that feels like so they don't do it, right? So it's not, you know, they know that, oh, this is how if I, you know, eat, you know, the whole birthday cake, this is how I feel. And really mm-hmm. connecting to that. There's a great book called The Blessings of a Skin Knee.
I read that book.
Right. So yeah. it's even though it's not food related, it totally reminds me of this, right? Is that as parents, we are so afraid to let our kid hurt themselves or get hurt that we're not teaching them any resiliency.
Right.
And they need resiliency with food too.
And I think the other thing to point out is a child eating like this is not, there's no guarantee that your child won't become fat.
Right.
Eating this way.
Yeah.
Your child might go through fat periods. Your child might become a fat child.
Yeah.
You know, we as dietitians, we learn to look at growth charts and patterns and deviations from those patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's really important as far as childhood growth goes.
Yeah.
And so your child might become fat. Is that the worst thing that could happen? I don't think that it is.
I can't think that that's the worst thing.
I was a fat kid.
Yeah.
You know, full yeah. confession here. I had friends. I had a lot of fun. Yeah, I did. I was teased, for sure. I was teased.
But
you know, my mom made sure she defended my body
yeah.
very much to me. She's like, who cares if you're fat?
Well,
and that was so helpful. And I think that it also made me sort of a resilient person. I'm not saying that everybody should get bullied or teased.
No.
I wish that that never happened,
mm-hmm.
you know, to anybody. But I want to say that it also made me resilient and understand that people weren't always going to be kind.
And people are going to tease us for anything.
There are kids who have never been fat that are teased about a
exactly.
lot of stuff.
And yeah. so, you know, I could have a bad hair day and someone's going to tease me. I mean, kids are cruel. Unfortunately, but
somebody teased me about how I ate crackers once.
Right? I mean, it's like,
why are you even watching that? But that's what kids do.
Yes, that's what kids do. And so, you know, again, I need to protect my child from everything. And if they're not fat, at least they won't get bullied. Right? They won't be a statistic.
Right.
They're going to be a statistic anyway. They were born and someone's keeping track of birth rates. They're already a statistic.
Yeah.
You know, yes. I mean, sorry.
So, and they're kids, so at some point, they're going to be teased.
And you know what? They're going to get hurt. And we can't protect them, right? So this, you know, this article is really twofold, right? It's the clean eating part, but it's like the extreme parenting too, right? We're more experts on one than the other. But, you know, they both are concerning.
Absolutely. They're both concerning. Yeah. I mean, I'm a little fearful, and this is what happens when you get older, I think. This is every older person's, oh my God, the next generation coming up, what's going to happen? But I do feel that way a little bit. This is when you know you're old.
Yeah.
You know, you've ticked over, and yeah. it's like, oh my God, what's going to happen? This generation who can't tolerate any kind of food and they can't tolerate any kind of pain. And, you know, so of course, part of that is just me being old and yeah. older and fretful as one gets as one, you know, but I do have some concerns.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little worried.
Well, you know, to the kids of these families, we're here for you.
Yeah.
Listen to our podcast. You're going to, in about 5 years, 10 years, you're going to love this episode.
It's all about you.
It's all about you.
And I hope that you get pizza someday.
Right. Because pizza's awesome.
Super awesome.
Right.
I love pizza so much.
Yeah. And so is, like, you know, kale chips. Kale chips are great too. You know, all that stuff is great. And it, hopefully you learn to love all of it. And
yeah.
Not just, you know,
and not love it in like the scary kind of love
right.
that you're talking about.
Find,
you know,
pleasure from
non-consensual food love, like just in a regular kind of, just in a regular kind of way.
Sorry, I have non-consensual food love running through my head. That poor pizza, it didn't consent.
I know,
the poor pizza.
But that kind of obsessive,
yeah.
you know, way with food.
Yes, so. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, hopefully, you know, I think clean eating is here to stay for a little while.
Right.
Until it, hopefully it will run its course quickly and we can move on to the next wackadoodle thing.
As paleo is sort of waning, clean eating is in the ascendance.
Right.
When, you know?
It's like Hydra, right? Hydra's from the Avengers,
yes.
in case you don't know.
Yes,
right?
I'm an Avengers fan,
okay, you know,
of the movies anyway.
You know, cut off one head, another one takes its place.
Right, that's true. And I think that, you know, starting with Kellogg back in the day where he invented cereal to suppress our sex drive, we're always... Did you know that?
No, didn't work.
It did not work at all. Although Special K remains a bland favorite of mine. Not for that reason.
Okay.
So anyway, I hope that, you know, in my dream of dreams, we all become normal eaters, but I don't think that's going to happen. So that's why you and I are here to try to sort through the bullshit and help you to become a regular, normal eater that isn't totally obsessive and fearful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this was a good one. I enjoyed this one. Hopefully, there'll be another crazy article we can comment on soon.
Get giddy about. I know. Right. We're getting totally giddy about this article.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. We look forward to connecting with you again on our next podcast. We have a Facebook page now, so check us out on Facebook, Dietitians Unplugged, if you just search that. The page will come right up. Leave us some comments. Tell us what you want us to talk about, and maybe your request will be a future episode.
Yeah, that'd be great to hear from people what they want to hear us talk about.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks, Glennis. This is fun.
Thank you, Aaron.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye.